Angie has made it easier than ever to hire high-quality pros to get all your home service jobs done well. Just bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie will connect you with local pros who match your specific needs. Or book a service instantly at an upfront price. So join the millions of homeowners who use Angie to care for their homes and get your next home service job done well. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I.com. Angie has made it easier than ever to hire high-quality pros to get all your home service jobs done well. Just bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie will connect you with local pros who match your specific needs. Or book a service instantly at an upfront price. So join the millions of homeowners who use Angie to care for their homes and get your next home service job done well. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I.com.
You have entered the steam room where today we proudly say this is episode number 30.
Wow.
I'm Ernie Johnson, Charles Barkley, episode number 30, and it's presented by Tractor Supply Company.
Yep, it is. But you got to get the tractor first, because it doesn't do you any good to have the supplies without the tractor.
It would be beneficial to have a tractor.
Yes.
And just determine what supplies you needed for it. But we certainly appreciate Tractor Supply Company for sponsoring the steam room.
Well, you know, listen, if I was Kennedy Jet Smith, I'd be asking you for a tractor.
In fact, I could use two. This is a lot of fun here, Chuckster. We've through these 30 episodes, we've had some wonderful guests. We're going to have a couple more great ones today in Patrick Ewing and Dikembe Mutombo joining us together to talk about the legacy of John Thompson. So we look forward to that part of the show. Tim Kiley, our legendary longtime producer, will be joining us. And of course, we'll have Chuck's answering machine.
Why do you just throw the word legendary around all the time?
Only when it fits. Only when it fits. If this is your first time, welcome. If this is multiple for you, then you're a loyal steamer and we appreciate your business. And so does Tractor Supply Company.
But you need a tractor.
it would be beneficial.
Well, first of all, I'm just going to salute a couple guys because we're bringing on Patrick and Dikembe. And I just want to say thank you to John Thompson. You know, one thing I miss about the Final Four this year was him holding court. And, you know, Ernie, there's certain people you meet in life, you always wonder who they like, what they're going to be like in real life. And obviously, even though it was during my generation, when I'm watching John Thompson and the Big East and all those guys, I'm a fan. And to see Big John on the sidelines, you're like, man, that dude looks mean. You know, like, you see the way he gets on his players. You know, he's talking about he walks off the court for Prop 48. And you're like, man, this guy gonna be tough when you meet him. And then when you meet him, the first thing you realize, he's just a gentle giant. And the thing I love and respect about this man was he wanted you to be a good person. Like, you know, a lot of these sports in college, listen, I'm not going to hate it because basketball gave me everything in my life. But most of it is they just want W's and L's because coaches are under tremendous pressures to win or they're going to get fired. They have families too. But I also believe a coach's number one job is to prepare you, number one, get you an education, and also prepare you for the world. And there's two guys that when you talk to their old players, he says, he didn't care about me as a basketball player. He wanted to be a great man. That's Dean Smith and John Thompson. You never heard a player say a bad word about either of those guys. They just want you to be great men. And to be a black man at a major university, there had to be a tremendous stress on Coach Thompson at all times because you have to win or you're going to get fired. And there's three guys I want to acknowledge. Coach Thompson, John Chaney, and Nolan Richardson. And all three of those guys are winners, and they're amazing men. But, man, what Coach Thompson did for guys who I know personally, obviously Patrick Ewing and Dikembe, who we're going to interview later, but also Alonzo Mourning, Michael Jackson, who's one of the reasons I'm at TNT. For a coach to like, hey, I don't give a damn about basketball. I want y'all to be great men. Like, to have them guys take etiquette classes, you know, like he said, no, don't worry about just crap in the United States. Learn what's happening in the rest of the world. Who does that? Except John Thompson. There might be some other coaches who did it, but John Thompson talked about it all the time. And I'm gonna miss him at the Final Four. You know, Ernie, you got the pleasure of working with him. I know that had to be amazing.
No, it was. And you know, you never, to the point you made, you never know, you know, after watching him on the sidelines for years and watching him coach and doing his thing, and you're saying, I wonder what he's like when you sit down face to face. And your gentle giant reference, that was perfect. It was like a grandfather figure who just exuded this swag and this power and respect. You could tell how much everybody respected him. He would do these sit down interviews, Chuckster, with, you know, Kevin Garnett, with Isaiah Ryder, with Vince Carter, with Allen Iverson, and he would get right to the point. There was no tap dancing around anything. You know, he'd tell, you know, Isaiah Ryder, what the hell are you doing?
Yeah.
You know, look at this great life you've got, and what are you doing? And then Isaiah would respond, and John says, no, I don't trust you. I don't believe you. And it was the kind of thing where if it's just a reporter who's sitting with, like Ryder at that point, it's probably take the mic off. You know, what are you doing going at me like this? But when it's John Thompson,
you got to respect him.
Yeah, and so it was wonderful to see that. And you know, Michael Doyle, who works at NBA TV, and we've known Michael Doyle for a long time, and he played a little college basketball, grew up in Louisiana. I was talking to him the other day. He said he felt so proud as a young black man in Louisiana watching Georgetown win it all in 1984. And then to have the opportunity to be the guy who's kind of handling John Thompson's schedule at TNT and going places with him and helping produce these sit-down interviews. He said he was in awe to be able to do that. And so his influence was just so far-reaching.
Yeah.
And then to hear everybody talk about him and all the players who have played for him, and I know you're going to probably get a feel for that too when we sit down with Deke and Pat.
Yeah, and you know, and I've been watching Mike Krzyzewski and guys like that and Jim Boeheim talk about what John meant. I mean, and, you know, they all had great accolades, but they just talked about the pressure he was under, and he was always true to himself. And you got to always admire somebody who's true to their self.
Yep.
I hope that I made him proud. We talked every year at the Final Four, which when I found out he passed away, that was the one thing I was saying to myself, oh man, I didn't get a chance to see him one last time at the Final Four. I mean, like, he would have, and you know, you like you said about in awe, like he's had these little sit downs with all these coaches, and most of them were young black coaches, and we sit there for hours, and it was like, E.F. Hutton is speaking. And it was so awesome. It was so awesome and cool. It was awesome. It was amazing. So I just want to give a coach a shout out and tell him and Nolan Richardson and John Chaney, thank y'all for everything. And coach, we're going to miss you.
Well said, Chuckster. And I echo that. And folks, stick around because this next segment.
Special.
It's going to be epic and I'm not overselling it. Steam Room continues after this. We welcome you back to the Steam Room. Charles, this
is big right here, man. I'm going to say special guest.
This is basketball royalty. I mean, I'm sitting here doing a podcast now with three basketball Hall of Famers. And in this week in which we lost the great John Thompson, it is our pleasure to welcome into the steam room Patrick Ewing and Dikembe Mutombo. Guys, we can't thank you enough for making the time in your day to come and spend some time with me and the Chuckster.
I've been knowing both of you guys for a lot of years. Charles, we've been battling for years. So once I got that call, you know I had to show up.
Thank you, Ernie. Thank you, Charles, for having me. I really appreciate them.
So my first question is, Patrick, when did you first meet Coach Thompson?
The first time I ever had the opportunity to meet him was I was a sophomore in high school. He came to Boston to recruit this other young man by the name of Paul Little, and we were playing against them in the tournament, in high school tournament. And you know, he said what he told me is that once he saw me play, he told his assistant coach, "Forget the other guy. Get me him, and I'll win the championship." And after the game, I see him and Red Auerbach walking to our locker room, and that was the first time I got to meet him. I was like, I didn't know who he was, but I knew who Red Auerbach was. I'm like, oh my God, that's Red Auerbach. Yeah. You know, and that was my first time meeting him.
What about you, Dink?
Yeah, were you playing intramural ball at the time you first met him?
No, it was like a week after I arrived in the U.S. At Georgetown University. Then it was a student bodies that came to get me, and they said that the basketball coach want to meet you. They know that you're here, they want to meet you. Then they took me there at McDonald's gym, and when I realized that this tall giant man walk out the door and look at me and say, "How you doing, son?" So I just got so scared and I panicked. And I didn't know he was that big. And it was the first time for me to see somebody that tall can look at me eye to eyes with that crazy look and say, "Hey, how you doing? Welcome to the United States of America."
So, Patrick, was you always going to go to Georgetown, or was it a big decision?
It was a huge decision. As you know, I was the number one recruit coming out that year. You know, I visited six or seven schools. I can't remember. I'm getting old. But it came down to UCLA or Georgetown. You know, I loved UCLA. That was my first visit. I had a great visit out there. You know, got to meet Kareem, Walton, all those great UCLA players. But they let me get back on the plane. I got back on the plane, and I'm like, you know, I'm gonna stay back east. So, you know, Georgetown was my last visit. I loved it there, and I'd always loved Coach Thompson, just the way that he carried himself, the way that he spoke. He was someone that I could, you know, emulate. He also played the position, so. You know, Georgetown was a natural fit.
Just to follow up on that, when you went to visit UNC, the story is that maybe concerns over Klan activity there and Dean Smith saying to you that, "Hey, look, the place for you is Georgetown." How does that all play out?
Well, I did visit North Carolina, and that was my first time meeting Michael Jordan. And he was talking trash that day, the first time, from the first day I met him to this day. And it was ironic because when I was on my visit, there was a huge Ku Klux Klan rally in Carolina. And, you know, and when you go to visit Carolina, they put you in that the Carolina Inn, the hotel on campus. So every cricket I heard, I'm jumping, I'm looking, I'm like, Klan is trying to come in. But yeah, Coach Smith was a great man. He told me that if I didn't come to North Carolina, that I should go to Georgetown, that would be a great fit for me. But, so, you know, even though I listened to what he said, I did end up going to Georgetown, but I love Dean Smith. I thought he was a great coach, a great person. And I thanked him for that advice.
You know, Patrick, I said on the show the other night, I said, Patrick Ewing, Dikembe Mutombo, and Alonzo Mourning are three of the best men I've ever met. I'm not talking about basketball players. I'm about three of the best men I ever met. And there's only two coaches, and I said this, there's only two coaches that I know where the players tell me he wanted us to be great men. He didn't worry about the basketball. And that was John Thompson and Dean Smith.
All right. Yes.
And how much did he talk to y'all about education and doing the right thing off the court?
All the time.
All the time.
You know, he had that basketball, which we still have in our offices, you know, the deflated basketball. You know, and one of the things he would always talk to us about is that at some point the ball is going to stop bouncing. Either you're going to make it to the NBA and it's going to stop eventually, or you're not going to make it to the NBA and you're going to have to go to find something else to do right after college. So he would do a lot of different things. He'd bring a lot of people in and individuals in from different walks of life for us to talk to. James Brown was one of them. You know, James Brown, who played basketball, who went to Harvard and became one of the best broadcasters in sports. So he came in. We had people from Coca-Cola, people from McDonald's, all people from who looked like us, who played basketball, but then, you know, went into the other side of business.
Dikembe, when I was talking to Michael Jackson the other day, the old point guard, and he was talking about that same thing. He talked about the fact that when you were going to play for John, you better go to class. You better be up on current events, not just in the United States, but around the world. And he said there were even etiquette classes so that when you went out later in life and you went to a dinner, you knew which fork to use, which glass was yours, all of that.
Yes.
Tell me about that and his emphasis on things beyond the basketball court.
When I missed classes, I think my sophomore year, because I was not feeling well, I decided that I would just go to the hospital on campus, go see the dentist and have my tooth taken care of, and go back to the dorm. And I missed my two classes. It was my history class and my philosophy class. Then late in the afternoon, I said, okay, it's 4:00. Let me start walking to McDonald's gym for practice. Soon then I walked there, Ernie. He just let me have it. He let me have it. He said, son, what are you doing here? I don't want to see you here. You came here to go to school. You left Congo to come to go to school in America. You didn't come here to play basketball. And see, so if you don't want to go to class, you're going home today. And I thought he was kidding at the beginning. I was still young. And he said, go to the locker room, and there's a plane ticket there waiting for you. And there's a cab waiting for you by the dorm, and get out here. And I went to buy my locker, and there was a one-way ticket way back to Kinshasa. And I was like, coach, I'm not going. So I started crying. He called me any kind of name. I just went inside to his office, and there was late Miss Friendly there, our academy advisor. And I just sat down, and I cried like for 4 hours while my teammates were practicing. I said, coach, I'm not leaving America. I'm staying. You're not going to let me go. So later on that evening, and he said, okay, you can stay. Just don't miss class no more. I never missed class after that.
Man, that's amazing. Hey, you know, Patrick, we're technically in the same age group, and we played against each other. But my first recollection of basketball was like, yo, man, the Big East is on tonight. How crazy was that? Like, when y'all played Syracuse, when y'all played St. John's, and I remember the first time I got to meet you, it was like royalty. But how crazy were those Big East days?
Oh, it was great. You know, when you're going through it, you don't really think of it as, you know, we're the best thing in sports right now. You're just out there battling. You know, you're competing. You know, we're all competing against one another, all vying to try to get to the mountaintop. You know, I was fortunate that I had a great coach and I had some great guys surrounding me that made my experience here wonderful. It's funny, I was watching the Knicks had a thing celebrating me, And I was able to watch some of those games. And I'm watching us playing against Houston. And I'm like, man, Reggie Williams was a beast. I had to pick up the phone right then and I said, Reggie, I don't know if I ever told you this, but man, you was a great player.
Yeah.
You know, I got all the credit, but I had some great guys surrounding me that helped pull that load.
Dikembe, what did aside, you know, we've talked about his emphasis, John Thompson's emphasis on everything outside the court, but as a player, what did he demand of you?
Coach demand your hard work, want you to be productive every given night when you walk there in practice. There was no day off. He wanted to be much better than you were yesterday. And he wanted to do what he was asking you to do. For me, he was not worried about me scoring no points, learn how to improve my offense. He said, son, every given night, you walk in the practice. I want you to challenge Alonzo Mourning and then your best ability and trying to block as many shots as you can and rebound the ball. And if you can do it, I will make you a millionaire. And you don't have to go and look for a job somewhere. And he did that. And he was able to help me to go out to becoming the kind of player that I've become, the kind of person, and go and make a difference in the world.
You know, obviously, we got a lot of stuff going on today in the world. How much did Coach talk to y'all about social issues?
Oh, he talked about it all the time. You know, that's one of the things that was great about him, you know. Even though there wasn't any social media and, you know, we didn't really understand that we all had a platform to speak up. He was one that he talked about it. He showed it by, you know, walking out in those or protesting those games that he talked about, that he protested. He talked about it, all the different things that he had to endure, you know, over his lifetime. You know, being when he first got the job at Georgetown, walking in and seeing the news with that negative sign note on it. But he spoke about everything that it was happening in society. And, you know, that's one of the things I loved about him. You know, he wasn't just a basketball coach to us. He was a person that wanted us to elevate ourselves to be the best, not only players that we could be, but also the best men that we could be. And that's one of the things I loved about him, and I will miss about him.
Dikembe, go ahead and follow up on that.
I was there in 1988 when he walked away from the game at the Capitol Center because of the Proposition 48. We didn't know as a players. We didn't know. We were just sitting there. We was all shocked. And soon then the referee blew the whistle. And we look at the bench and trying to get some direction which play we're going to run. Next time we knew Coach was just walking away. And that will make me to remember that this man fought so hard for so many African Americans in this country. There's so many issues that we are facing right now that resonate in our life that go way, way, way back. And Coach been fighting for the same thing since he got to Georgetown, and he fought for it all the way to the 80s, to the 90s. And even when he left the coaching career, he was still talking about it. So he was not afraid for us, his players, to go out there and fight for something that we believe in and making a change. He believed in a changing in this world. And he made the University of Georgetown to be the kind of university that it is today. Otherwise, nobody would not talk about our school. And it changed the culture of basketball because of Coach Thompson.
You know, Pat, how big of an influence was Coach Thompson you decided to become a coach?
You know, when I decided that I was going to stop playing, I met with Michael. And Michael offered me a job to come to Washington and coach with the Wizards. And one of the things, when I spoke to Coach about it, and he told me that you have to tackle this the same way that you tackle that being the best player that you can. He said there's a lot of people, a lot of great players who decide to do something after they finish. And they just go about it half-assed. He said, you have to put in all the put in the hard work, put in the time, the effort that you did going into being one of the best players that you could be, doing the same thing as coach, into coaching. And that's what I did. So he didn't start me into coaching, but he definitely made sure that I knew that it was going to take a lot of hard work to be the best player I became. And it's funny because I'm working in Washington and Jeff Van Gundy was doing TV and the talent, they come and watch practice. And it was then that Jeff saw that, you know, that the way that I was coaching was the same way that I went and did as a player. And when he got a job that after the season was over in Houston, he offered me a job to come to Houston. So that's how I became a coach in Houston, because he saw that I was channeling my effort into being the best coach that I could be. And I wasn't just out there just, you know, I'm Patrick Ewing, I'm a great basketball player, I want to be a coach. He saw that I was working my butt off to try to be the best coach I can possibly be.
Even after all these years, Patrick, John Thompson casts a long shadow. And when you walk into that spot and you are holding down the same job that he had for almost 30 years, right, as the head coach of Georgetown, how did that make you feel, and what did you feel you had to live up to?
Well, you know, he's a tough man to try to live up to. You know, he casts, like you said, a large shadow. But I did not, you know, the way I look at it is I'm not going to be Coach Thompson. I'm going to be Patrick Ewing. You know, I was fortunate enough that, you know, he was still here with us when I first got the job, and I could always – you know, either look over to the side and practice, because he was always at practice, or pick up the phone and call him for any advice that I might need. You know, I'm going to miss him. My heart is heavy. All our hearts are heavy because he was an important figure in all of our lives. But if it wasn't for him, I would not be here at Georgetown. He's the one that taught me into taking this job or trying to interview for the job. And then I got it, because my goal and my focus was on trying to be a head coach in the NBA. He said, oh, you haven't gotten an opportunity yet, so you need to try another avenue. So, you know, I applaud him. I love him. We will all miss him, but I'm enjoying being a coach here. I'm not going to be John Thompson. I hope that one day I'll be able to win a championship, but all I can do is be Patrick and be the best version of Patrick that I can be.
Hey, I got a question for you about Chuck. As contemporaries in the league of him playing against him, Deke, you go first. What's your favorite Charles story?
You can see on my Hall of Fame video when they were showing that. I think Charles was not afraid of no big man in this game. It doesn't matter if you are 8 foot or 7 foot in. Whatever, he would still come against you. And he knew that I was a great shot blocker, but he always trying to attend to come, trying to get one of the dunk. And one time, he gave me a chance to block him like a three time, like in 6 seconds. He kept putting it there, but I was swapping in it. I was like, what's wrong with this guy, man? He doesn't respect me. He keep coming, and I got him very well. I remember that.
You sure he didn't dunk on you?
I gotta go look at my films, man.
That's a good. I don't know the answer to that question. I'm not gonna lie.
Patrick, what's your best memory? And that can be playing against him, or it can be playing with him on the dream team.
Well, you know, like I said, I've been knowing Charles for a lot of years, and you know, there's been so many great memories. And what I can think of, well, the one that comes to mind right now is us trying out for the Olympics in 84. We're trying out for the Olympics. And, you know, if anybody who knows Bobby Knight, he's mad, he is yelling, he's screaming, he's cursing. And of course, Charles, you know, he always knows how to just lighten the room. So, you know, Bobby's in there cursing and screaming. Charles just says one of his, I didn't really remember what he said. But you can see Bobby gets all red. All of us players, we all cracking up laughing. But no, he just, you know, Charles has, he's always been that type of a guy that, you know, he could always put a smile on everyone's face. He could, you know, even in tense moments, he can always make you feel calm. And, you know, we were all battling, trying to make that Olympic team. And, you know, he just, I don't even remember what he said, but he just did something that made us all laugh and smile and feel good.
Hey, Chuck, you know what that reminds me of? A story like that? That meeting we had before March Madness a few years ago.
CBS?
When a very serious topic is being discussed and you have a way of throwing something out there. I don't even know if we should share that story or not. Do you think we should?
Yeah, we got to share that story.
So here's the deal. I'll start it. Okay. We're kind of having sensitivity training, but because they had some incidents up there that they can't, you know, that HR said, look, this can't continue. And they gave examples of what had happened. And so everybody is kind of sitting in there stone-faced and listening to it. And some of these were like, hey, you can't do this kind of thing because we've had employees do this and we've do it. And so Charles, says, does anybody have any questions? Charles raises his hand and says,
hey, it sounds like y'all some freaks up here. Y'all hiring?
It was unbelievable.
You're a nut.
Hey, man, I just want to tell you two guys something. I think y'all are both, y'all obviously Hall of Famers, but y'all just great men.
Thank you.
And I know this has been a tough week for you guys, and I just want to thank y'all for taking time because I think what Coach's message was is so important, and we need to keep that message, especially today, the environment we're in.
Yes.
You know, he couldn't have raised two better men than you guys. So I just want to thank y'all for taking time to share some memories.
Coach was very, very proud of us. He was proud of his players. He was proud of his student, as he always called us. He never looked at us as a basketball player because we found Georgetown University. We were not a basketball player. We were student face on campus. Then when you go to your study and you can come back and go and become a basketball player. So he respected us so much and he wanted us to be productive. And we're going to miss him. It's been tough for me for the last 2 days. I'm still holding my head up. It was very difficult when I got a phone call from Coach Ewing in the morning to let me that Coach was gone. I didn't know that he was even at the hospital. And it was very difficult for me to share that news even with my wife and my children.
As tough as these couple days have been, and especially for guys who have played for him, it's good to see you be able to remember him fondly with laughter, you know, and it's very appropriate for the time because you guys were special parts of his life. He was obviously a special part of your lives, and let's just rest with those good memories, man. That you were fortunate enough to play for him.
It's even though our hearts are heavy, and we are definitely sad with his passing. It's also got to be a celebration of life. You know, all the things that he has accomplished, not only as a coach but also as a man. You know, it's our duty as his disciples. To make sure that we're not just crying and being sad. We have to celebrate the journey and celebrate the things that he has accomplished.
Thank you, Coach. We will miss him. Great teacher.
Yes, sir.
You cannot go a month without not calling him. That's what kind of man he was. Otherwise, he wouldn't find you.
Dikembe Mutombo, Patrick Ewing, thank you.
My pleasure, fellas. Enjoy, man.
Hey, guys, thanks for joining us today.
Great talking to y'all.
That was great stuff. That was awesome.
I'd love to have known what you said in that Bobby Knight meeting, dude. We're back back in the steam room, and you know, we've got a Zoom picture here. So here's the legendary longtime producer of Inside the NBA, Tim Kiley, who's got a shower cap on, a clear shower cap, and he's got his steam room robe on.
Did we disturb you, Mr. Kiley? I know it's an off day. Did we disturb you?
Chuck, very important. You remember you beat up Godzilla in a Nike commercial?
Yes.
The Japanese mayor of Tokyo has given him the honor of citizenship in Tokyo.
Well, I'm surprised how popular those movies still are over there. I've been over there probably 10 to 15 times. And I think a few times I've been there, Godzilla's been like the number one movie that week. It was crazy. It was crazy.
I'm trying to picture you sitting in a hotel room in Japan and flipping through that remote control and say, oh yeah, good, Godzilla's on.
No, so I'll tell you, listen, Ernie, one time I played in a, I was over there doing some stuff for Nike, and I'm playing golf with a guy who's a famous Godzilla actress.
Wait, it's a guy who's an actress?
This is a true story, Ernie.
You said you were playing with a famous Godzilla actress.
Actor.
Actor, okay, thank you.
Yeah, actor. So the crowd was loving this dude and barely paying me any attention. It was hilarious. I feel the same way when I'm walking around Auburn with Bo Jackson on a football weekend. They're knocking me out the way to get to Bo Jackson. That's the way I felt when I was hanging out with this guy who was a famous Godzilla actor.
I just can't believe they named him an honorary citizen after he blasted the city every about. How many times did he blast Tokyo?
Every time.
By the way, the interview with Patrick and Deke doesn't get any better than that.
Oh, weren't they great?
And Coach Thompson, I covered him when in the glory days of the Big East. And he had the greatest post-game press conferences of all time. He'd come in with that towel on. Most coaches made a statement about the game and then opened it up for questions. And he dared you to ask him a question. You know, he would just stand there and wait until somebody asked a question. And I was on deadline. They had just had a fight and at the end of the game. And I asked him, Coach, you're going into the Big East tournament. This is the second fight of the year between Pitt and Georgetown. Do you think there'll be suspensions? MF, don't you think families fight? Everybody fights. Families fight. He's screaming at me like left and right. Every other word was an MF. It was tremendous.
I love it.
You got a good sound bite.
Oh, absolutely. And I told him years later when I met him, I said, Coach, you know, you MF'd the hell out of me one time many years ago. And he went, I did that to a lot of dudes.
you know what's amazing? As great a coach as he was, he's two plays away from winning three, Villanova played the perfect game and beat them by one or two. And then the turnover. So
Freddie Brown.
So as great as his career was, man, he's a couple plays away from being on the Mount Rushmore of coaches.
He may already be, though.
Yeah.
He makes the Mount Rushmore without a doubt.
Yeah.
Thanks, TK. Always wonderful having you around. See you down there at the studio, my friend.
Yep.
Final segment of episode number 30. I mean, it's a landmark episode.
That's like three decades, 30, right?
Yeah. Yeah. That's true. It's like how long I've been at Turner, as a matter of fact. Actually, been at Turner for 31 now.
Hey, and you got a nice paperweight with that too, didn't you?
No, it's an acrylic memento.
Yeah. Okay.
The number 404-987-0330 should be firmly in everyone's mind because that is the number of Chuck's answering machine. We always love to hear from loyal steamers. Spin it.
You've reached Charles Barkley. Leave a message, America.
First of all, thank y'all so much for what you do. Greatly appreciated. This is Dex from Texas. Charles, this is my question. In 1993, you once told the world that you are not a role model. However, And the way that I see you move today, how you're involved with charities and organizations and using your voice and platform for the benefit of others and seeming to leverage the status you have in life and trying to maximize that for those who need a voice, I wonder, do you now embrace the idea of being a role model? And if you do, when did that happen? Did it happen before you stopped playing ball or after you stopped playing ball? Thank you all. Take care. Keep being role models. God bless.
Great question, man. Great question, Dex.
So, Dex, I want to tell you how that whole thing came about. So, you know, when you play pro sports, you speak at a lot of schools. And unfortunately, a lot of our schools are still segregated. So when I would go speak at schools, predominantly white schools, I'd always ask them, well, how many of y'all want to play pro sports? And when I was going to the predominantly white schools, only like 5% raised their hand. The rest wanted to be doctors, lawyers, engineers, teachers, firemen, policemen, things like that. And when I would go speak at a predominantly black school, it was totally the opposite. I said, well, how many of y'all want to play sports? It was like 95%. And I started taking like little mental notes for like my first couple of years of speaking. Then I realized that black kids are brainwashed to think they can only be athletes and entertainers. They don't think they can be doctors, lawyers, engineers, accountants, things like that. So I went to Nike. I said, guys, I want to make this commercial. They're like, you're f-ing nuts. You are totally f-ing nuts. I said, no. They said, the public is going to kill you. I said, that's fine. I said, but I'm going to start a debate on the role model thing. I said, because I want these young black kids to know they can do other stuff than play sports. And to this day, man, Dex, that's the thing I'm most proud of. People still walk up to me today and say, hey, thank you for that commercial. But I really just wanted to start a debate and let young black kids know they can do other things other than play sports and be entertainers. So I was working on that behind the scenes the entire time. I'm so lucky that TNT gave me the opportunity to talk more about stuff today. Because that's one of the reasons I came to TNT. So I'm more vocal about it today, but that's the reason I made the role model commercial. But thank you, Dex.
Next question.
Hey, Ernie. Hey, Charles. Hey, Tim. As us loyal schemers know, the show is sponsored by Tractor Supply Company. And I guess my question is for Ernie and Charles, if you guys had a farm, what kind of fruits or vegetables would you grow? My guess is blackberries for Ernie and jalapeno peppers for Charles. Thank you, guys. Have a nice day.
You would definitely be right with the blackberries, going back to the blackberry moments I talk about in my book, those sweet, unpredictable moments that kind of make life extraordinary. So, yeah, blackberries is big. In fact, we have some in Cheryl Ann's garden here. She's got some raised beds over here on the side yard, and tomatoes, and blackberries and peppers and all kind of stuff and peaches. But I would also, if I had my own garden, you'd have to have fried okra in it. Ugh. Not just okra. It would have to come up as fried okra. That would be awesome. See, I'm a big fried okra guy. I would eat fried okra all day long.
First of all, okra is disgusting. Let's get that out the way.
Fried okra. Fried okra.
Well, I haven't tried fried okra, but it can't be in a
come on!
That. No, I'm not eating that. Wait, so do jalapenos grow out of the ground or on a tree?
They're a plant.
They're a plant, okay. Yeah. On my farm, which I've never been on the farm, even though I grew up in Alabama, I'm probably going to do apples or pears. Those are my two favorite fruits. So if I'm going to be on a farm, first of all, pears are the greatest thing ever. But apples are a close second. So that'd be my two.
Chuckster, you ever just have a tomato sandwich?
No.
Oh, let me tell you something about the joy of the tomato sandwich. On toasted or grilled bread, slice up like a homegrown tomato, maybe a little mayo on the bread, salt and pepper. Tomato sandwich, very underrated. Very underrated.
Wait, with no meat?
No meat. Just a tomato sandwich.
Is a sandwich without meat on it?
Is peanut butter and jelly a sandwich?
That's a good point. That was a nice comeback, Ernie. That's a nice comeback right there. I didn't think your mind could work that fast, but that's a nice comeback.
Kind of surprised myself with that one. Next caller.
Hi, guys. My name is Dustin, and I'm from Arizona. You guys do such a great job tackling all the serious issues, and also you guys have great sense of humor. I just wanted to say that. But also, I know you guys were looking for lyrics for your theme song, so I came up with some lyrics. I'm a terrible singer, but I will try to sing it for you. Chuck and Ernie in the steam room. Come and join us in the steam room. Chuck and Ernie in the steam room. Leave your towel on in the steam room. Thank you, guys.
What? Leave your towel on in the steam room. I like it.
I wish he had told us what city he lives in Arizona, since I live in Arizona.
Oh, man.
But, man, he's right about one thing. He's not a great singer.
Chuck and Ernie in the steam room. Come and join us in the steam room. Chuck and Ernie in the steam room. Leave your towel on in the steam room.
That's tremendous, man. Because I had said, okay, so he's doing this. And then to hear it with that thumping stand-up bass. Now that, I think he's onto something, man.
Dude, don't quit your day job, brother. Don't quit your day job. It was catchy. That was funny, though. Hey, man, we really appreciate all the support we get on the calls. But thanks for being a Law of Steamers, man. We try to, you know, so much stuff going on in the world. We try to give people some time where they can drive around and laugh. We've had tremendous guests, but we just want to make people laugh for a little bit every week with all the stuff going on. And we try to do serious stuff too, but we really just want to have fun on the podcast.
Hey, Cap, I hope we can do this. Michael Kaplan, our esteemed producer who does an unbelievable job with his show. Can we go out this week on episode 30 with the theme song with lyrics? That would be awesome. See you next week, everybody.
Chuck and Ernie in the steam room. Come and join us in the steam room. Chuck and Ernie in the steam room. Leave your towel on in the steam room.
Yeah. Man, that is catchy.
I love that.